The Whimsy by Petria Burchard, performed by Rachel L. Jacobs. Meet me at the Whimsy Lounge Tuesday night, 8 p.m. sharp. Desperate to see you. Come alone. T. I found the note in the bushes outside our apartment. Blue ballpoint pen on notebook paper, blocky handwriting slanting to the left. The note was crumpled and dirty, but the writing was clear. I held the note between my finger and thumb and looked around. Our apartment was in a courtyard with a few bushes and not much grass. It's a plain stucco building, painted tan, probably built in the 1970s. Not gorgeous. No one peeked from behind a curtain. No one watched me that I could see. I put the note in my wallet and tucked it in my purse. Desperate to see you. Who writes that? I'd never been inside the Whimsy Lounge, but I'd seen it from the bus on the way to work. It looked like a dive, the kind of place where the bartender knows the regulars by their faces, no names. And there's no kitchen service except stale peanuts from a vending machine. I imagined it smelled like cigarette smoke and the floor was sticky. I showed the note to Erin when she got home that night. We were cuddled up on the couch watching TV. Erin said, "Why'd you bring home litter?" She was laughing. She had a great smile. She used to say I was reckless, but I'm not. I just follow my gut. Erin said I was the craziest girl she'd ever met, but that's why she loved me. "I'm gonna go there Tuesday night," I said. Her smile dropped. "No, you don't know what desperate means." Her eyes were clear and wide. "Maybe the person who got the note threw it away," I said. "Maybe they lost it by accident. Maybe they'll show up, maybe not." "You'll stick out in a straight bar like that. Take your brother." "How do you know it's a straight bar?" "Come on." Of course it was a straight bar. "Dan works nights. You come with me." "No, but take somebody or don't go. That place is creepy." We both knew I'd go. I met Erin when she worked at the newspaper with Dan. He dragged me to the company picnic, said I needed to get out of the apartment and meet people. I guess I did. Erin was there with a guy, and I don't know what gave me the nerve, just my usual recklessness, I guess. I had this urge to flirt with her, and it seemed like she flirted back. When I saw her go into the women's restroom, I took my chance, got up from the picnic table and followed her right in. I was nervous. Must have washed my hands 10 times waiting for her to come out of the stall. And when she came, I acted surprised. She laughed. She knew I'd been waiting. So I just said I wanted to kiss her. And she said that would be all right. And I kissed her. Fireworks is the wrong word. It's more like an aching, a sort of push in your groin. I never felt it so strong. But later, there was something delicate about loving her. I was her first girlfriend, her only, and that seemed like a thing to hold, carefully. It made me feel protective of her and proud. Hell, it made me puff out my meager chest and strut. Foolish, but happy. Tuesday evening, I wore jeans and a pink sweater. I'm tall and skinny and have short hair. I'm not an obvious dyke, but I wanted to play it down. I didn't want to stand out in the Whimsy Lounge crowd, which is funny because I didn't know who that crowd would be. Erin walked me to the bus stop. It was already dark with no moon, but the night was warm and the streetlights spilled big circles on the sidewalk. We stood in the shadows, even though there was no one around. When we saw the bus coming, Erin gripped my arm with her small hand. Her face was pale. "Let's go home," she said. I took a second to listen to my gut, but it wasn't saying anything. I touched Erin's cheek. I always did that instead of kissing her. Even in the city, there are still people who don't want to see two women kissing. So we're careful. "It'll be fun," I said. "An adventure. You should come." She sighed, giving up. "Text me when you're on your way home." She let go of my arm and smiled, wrapping her sweater tight around herself, even though it was warm. It was hard not to kiss her then. I wasn't used to riding the bus at night. During the day, it was so crowded, I usually had to stand and hang on to the railing. On a Tuesday night, I had the whole seat to myself. I sat behind the driver and looked around. I wasn't scared, but I thought I should stay aware of my surroundings. A tired-looking woman across the aisle from me held her purse to her chest like it was a life jacket or something. People got on, people got off. It felt like it took forever to get to my stop, a block from the Whimsy. It's in the old part of downtown where commercial streets share corners with residential ones and hunched up old people walk home from the store carrying a bag in each hand by the handle. It's miles from the hip nightclubs and there weren't a lot of people out. Most of the stores were closed, but the diner was open. I could see through the window. In a booth, a middle-aged couple sat eating, not talking. I passed a fluorescent-lit mobile phone shop all locked up and a storefront church with rows of folding chairs inside and no one sitting in them. I paused across the street from the Whimsy. Above the sidewalk, the neon sign buzzed and snapped. One of the letters was out, and it blinked, Whimsy Lunch, in pink and green. It was 8:02. My gut started talking. Erin was right. This was crazy. The note could have been about any Tuesday already in the past. T could be anyone. Tom, Teresa, Terry, or a nickname. Tidbit, Tubby. My gut flashed and buzzed like the neon. Don't go. Don't go. Don't go. When I grabbed the door handle, my hand shook. I pulled open the heavy door and stepped into a corridor lit by dim, yellowish light. The room beyond was so dark it was almost invisible. The floor wasn't sticky, but the Whimsy Lounge smelled of stale beer. I walked down the corridor. At the other end, I had to let my eyes adjust. An old wooden bar ran the length of the room. Mirrored shelves behind it glowed with rows of green, gold, and brown liquor bottles. The bartender, a woman of about 60, glanced at me when I came in. Her blonde hair was frizzy and dry from dye, and her face was wrinkled in a permanent frown. She was waiting on a woman at the far end of the bar, who also turned to look at me. Everyone did. I could feel them twisting their necks almost in unison. They were obvious about it, stopping mid-sip, rotating on their chairs to stare. Erin was right. I stood out. I didn't belong. I shouldn't have gone there. The man closest to my end of the bar was fat, with a comb-over and a soiled canvas jacket. He spun his empty shot glass with a pudgy hand and glared at me. Beside him, A skinny guy in a baseball cap and work boots looked me up and down. At the far end, the bartender's customer had just received her beer. She was a middle-aged woman with hair poofed up like the proper wife of a 1970s politician. When she checked me out, she looked hopeful. There was a jukebox, but no music played. No one danced. A young guy in a business suit sat alone at a table nursing a cocktail and surreptitiously trying to get a load of me. The old lady at the next table stared openly, eyebrows raised and mouth open so wide she looked scared. She wore a cotton house dress and a ratty sweater, as if she'd run out the door at the last minute. I stood debating whether I should take a table, sit at the bar, or just turn and go. I didn't know how to react to being stared at like I was a rabbit and they were a pack of coyotes. The bartender ambled my way. "What can I get you?" "Oh," I couldn't think of anything else to say. She pointed at the empty stool at the near end of the bar next to the fat guy with the comb over.
"Have a seat. I got a nice lager on draft."
I climbed up. "Thanks." I put a $10 bill on the bar, hoping that would cover the lager and a tip. I would drink up and go, like my gut was finally begging me to do. The fat guy looked at his shot glass. People turned away at last. I could see them in the mirror behind the bar. Most of them looked at their drinks or at the door. The bartender brought a glass of beer and change.
"I'm Arlene. What's your name?"
I didn't even think. "People call me T." Arlene straightened. The fat guy's bar stool creaked when he spun around. Everyone's eyes returned to me. Even if I couldn't see them, I could feel their eyes like fingers on my skin. "I'm sorry," I said. "Is that bad?" No one answered. That's when I realized everyone in the place was a single. There were no couples nuzzling in the corner, no groups sharing a pitcher. The people at the bar weren't even talking to each other. They were just sitting, drinking, looking at me. "I should go." I stepped down from the stool. My heart was banging.
"You're not going anywhere," said Arlene.
She grabbed for my hand. I ran to the door, but the business suit guy had shot up from his chair. He took a couple of long strides, slammed the door to the corridor, and bolted it. I almost ran into him. I could tell from his eyes he was sober, angry.
"Why did you send the notes?"
He didn't shout. His voice came from somewhere in his throat. They all waited for my answer, staring, silent. I was the only one breathing, and my breathing was heavy. My heart was loud. "I didn't send them," I said. The guy crossed his arms. He didn't move. He didn't believe me. "I found one," I said. I moved my hand slowly. He watched as I slid my wallet from my pocket, removed the note, and held it up to show it to him. He blinked. "We all got one," said the woman with the politician wife hair. I turned. She opened her pocketbook to show her note. After a second, the skinny guy flipped his note from his shirt pocket and waved it with greasy fingers. The old lady pulled hers from the end of her sweater sleeve with a trembling hand. Even from several feet away, I could see the notes were all like mine. Same notebook paper, same blocky letters, same slant to the left.
"Who else walked in at 8 p.m. sharp?" said Arlene, her frown deepening. Who else is called T?
I'm not, I said. I'm sorry. T just came out because of the note, I guess. I didn't really know why. I backed away from the suit guy to step over to the bar and show my note to Arlene, along with my driver's license, so she could see I didn't have a T in my name. She should have asked for my ID in the first place. She took my license and held it to the light, squinting. In a clear voice, she read it aloud to everyone. Every word. Name. Date of birth. Height. Weight. And address. She looked around the bar.
What do you think? She asked the room. Stupid girl, said the fat guy. You shouldn't fuck with people, said the baseball cap guy, stuffing his note back into his pocket.
Arlene returned my driver's license and looked away. The suit guy pulled the bolt and stepped aside, but not by much. I ducked under his arm and ran. Outside, the neon reflected pink, green on the sidewalk. I ran. The bus wasn't at the stop. I ran to the next stop, and the next, until I saw the bus catching up to me. I had missed a call from Erin. She didn't leave a message. I texted her to let her know I was on my way home. She texted back, but it was only a couple of letters without a period or anything, like she had texted by accident. I hoped she wasn't mad. The bus couldn't go fast enough. At my stop, I jumped down and ran the three blocks to our place. The courtyard light glared. Our apartment window was dark except for the flicker of the TV. In the hallway, I unlocked the door, panting from running and knowing I'd find Erin on the couch watching TV. I'd go to her and hold her in my arms and tell her she was right about the whimsy. I stopped just inside the door. She was seated on the sofa in the dark, with the TV on, but silent. Her eyes were wide and unseeing. Blood everywhere. Erin, I whispered. I knew she wouldn't answer. I waited and listened. We were alone. I moved closer to her. There was no weapon left behind. Only a note stuck onto Erin's flannel shirt with a straight pin, as though she were a bulletin board. The same paper, same handwriting, the blocky letters, the slant. Thanks for playing, T. I reached out to pull the pin away. Then I stopped myself. I shouldn't touch anything. Not even her cheek. With my eyes on Erin, because I couldn't leave her, I pulled my phone from my pocket. I dialed 911 and told the operator what I saw and where I was. Then I stood still and waited for the sirens. I thought of the people at the Whimsy Lounge. For the moment, they were each alone, like me, waiting, playing T's game. But they knew my name. They had my address.